The only two modes in AI are the workflows, convincing workflows, and communities. When I say workflows and communities, I mean the model itself is not a moat. You might have a great model, but in let's just wait 3 months and a better model will come in. 2020, Apple released a new sensor, a LiDAR sensor on the phone.
Insane.
And I realized, or we realized with my co-founder, that anybody could start doing the same thing we were doing with drones, but using their phones. That was the original idea behind Scenario, is let anybody be a content creator. After we realized in late 2022 that the new way of making content would not be scanning, but a new way to make content would be prompting.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the All Things XR podcast. In this episode, I have Emmanuel de Mestre, CEO and co-founder of Scenario. Hi, Emmanuel.
Hey, Mochaba. How are you?
Thanks very much. Welcome to the All Things XR podcast. So, Emmanuel, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background and how we got into the technology industry?
Yeah, I've been an entrepreneur for, 15 years now. I graduated initially as a molecular biologist. I worked for 6 years in a few biotech startups. And then for some reason, I moved into tech, first by starting a drone company doing data processing and data analysis for drone imagery, doing 2D processing, 3D processing, AI-based analysis of drone data. And this lasted from 2012 to 2017-ish, when I sold that company to a US startup. And that's when I moved to the US from France, where I'm from. And when I moved to the US Bay Area, I worked a few years for the acquirer, and when COVID arrived, we decided to create a new business with my co-founder, which was Scenario, which is the company I'm the CEO of right now, which is an AI platform specifically for game studios, for them to generate all sort of contents in a very guided, in a very consistent manner.
Awesome. So, Manuel, what inspired you to co-found Scenario after your previous ventures?
So the previous venture, the name was Redbird. Redbird was doing data processing from these, was processing like millions of images taken by drones, right? But beyond images, these drones sometimes were capturing laser data. So you had both the laser, i.e. LiDAR, and the imagery as well to combine. And then if you remember in 2020, and everybody in XR must remember, that in 2020, Apple released a new sensor, a LiDAR sensor on the phone.
Insane.
And I realized, or we realized with my co-founder, that anybody could start doing the same thing we were doing with drones, but using their phones, which was to scan the world, scan their environments with just a phone. And that's the spark. That was the original idea behind Scenario, is let anybody be a content creator by scanning the stuff they like, they own, they appreciate, and they want to share. And that's what we've done for 1 year. After we realized in late 2022 that the new way of making content would not be scanning, even though it's a passion of mine, I love it. I think it's fascinating to capture some physical object in 3D, but a new way to make content would be prompting or would be guiding an AI to create that content much faster and probably much cheaper as well. So we pivoted in 2022 to that new version of Scenario, which is heavily AI-based and not scanning-based anymore.
Awesome. So what's the core mission of Scenario and how do you plan to achieve it?
Well, the core mission is to enable, namely game studios, so for now, even though we might have other type of customers, right now it's very, very gaming-focused, to let them generate the content they need for their games in a very guided in a very consistent way. AI is definitely some sort of magic, right? The type of prompts, maybe you modify your inference and you get something. But the biggest challenge that all users faced is the consistency of the generations, namely style consistency or subject consistency. So when you target a style, you're talking about a specific, you know, brush stroke, color palette, render, and so on, which you might not be able to get just with words. It's very hard to describe a style with just a few thousand words, which is exactly. the dictionary, right? Or you might struggle to reproduce a specific character, subject, object with the exact same proportions, expressions, outfits, facial features, and so on. This is very hard to describe and to consistently reproduce with AI. There are many ways to get that done. One, the most interesting way to nail consistency, the one we decided to investigate, was to let people train their own model using their own data. It's a technical term called, we say fine-tuning, essentially. It's basically plugging or bringing a small set of data. We're talking about 20, 50, 100 images, no more. And you customize a base model, such as Stable Diffusion or Flux and more, and you customize that base model to tweak it into a certain style or into a certain direction.
Awesome. So, Emmanuel, can you tell us a bit about how your product helps game developers get their assets and generate their assets more easily on the creative side?
Yep. So it's no secret. Gaming is a big business, and depending on the categories and verticals, game studios typically spend between 30% to 50% of their budget into creating the content. All types of content, right? It's not just 2D, 3D, audio, video, textures. It's pretty diverse, right? And they constantly need to update that content, new games, new campaigns, and new consoles, and so on. So it's a never-ending story. And when you look at the type of where does the content land, you typically have four buckets. Game developers, game studios need content for concepting, like quickly, you know, prototyping, concepting, building a game before it, like the early innings of the game. They need content for the game itself, which is going to be, you know, built, created, and shipped. They also need marketing content as well, marketing assets, and they need a lot of it, especially for niches like mobile gaming, where there is a huge, challenge in, marketing your mobile games. And then there is a new bucket, which personally I'm very excited about, which is the content that will be live generated in the game. You know, it's the UGC part of things, you know, user generated content or AI generated content, AIGC at runtime in the game. So four buckets, but each bucket has different constraints. It's when you do concept art, you do not have the same constraints as when you do live ops or production ready assets. Basically, the constraints are much higher for the content that is being in the game versus the content that you only keep internally, right?
Exactly.
And so we see that journey when studio adopt AI. They typically start with concepting. It's the less, risky, but also the less valuable, so to say. And then they move on to making marketing assets with AI, with Scenario or with other products. And then they venture into, I think, what's considered the risky part, which is live ops or production assets. And even more challenging is the live generated content, at runtime. So we see a bit of everything, but we see definitely studios starting from the easiest use case to the most complicated use case, which is a 12-month journey at least. You know, it's not something people do in just a few weeks.
Exactly. I myself had a startup which failed. We are developing a Pokemon style game, and I remember where I instructed my illustrator to, for example, illustrate a chest, and after a day I come by her computer and saw that it is not what I wanted, and it took another day to revise that. But with products like yours, it would be much easier, and it will lower the costs a lot, significantly. How do you see these tools like yours impact the game industry?
Okay, that's a super interesting question. By the way, the controversy right now, it's no secret, is that AI, is supposed, or people fear that AI will put them out of a job and AI will destroy jobs. It's going to change the job market for sure. Yeah, I'm not denying it. But what I've seen so far, at least for the customer that I get as much feedback as possible, is they've not reduced the size of their team, but they've been able to upskill their artists quite a lot with very concrete examples. One of them is a game studio based in Germany. called InnoGames. They make fairly big titles, by the way, games played by millions, web-based, essentially. And they're like 12 or 20 people now on Scenario, maybe more. And they started giving Scenario to artists that were initially doing mostly UI elements. So I would say it's easy, but it's less complicated than other artistic, you know, project like characters or backgrounds and so on. And they've been able to let these artists upskill themselves and, you know, handle more complex creations like characters and others using AI. And I found that fascinating, that people basically kept the same team, upskilled their own individuals, and now they're able to produce more and faster. And that's what every game studio is supposed to get and to reach at some point.
I see. I get your point. But how do you see these tools democratize game development?
Okay. So in many ways, you have the indie games, and then you have all kinds of bigger studios, AA, AAA, mobile, exactly, and so on. So it will democratize all categories. The indie games, though, all of them struggle with getting the content for their games. They often turn out to asset stores, the Unity asset store, the Epic or Unreal asset store, and so on. But there is only so much you can have on these stores, and there is very little options to personalize the content on these stores. And if they don't like, if that category of user doesn't like what they see on the asset store, all they have to do is find artists. And if they find themselves in the same situation you described, which is it can be fairly expensive, can take a lot of time, a lot of back and forth. And eventually it's one reason why you see a lot of indie games never get published eventually, because it's too long and it's too expensive for them. AI is perfect for indie games. They get very quick feedback at a lower cost. They can experiment. They can probably refine. They may at some point turn to artists, by the way, when it's the right time. But at least they can, you know, they can speed up the production of their games. And when it comes to the bigger organization, it's a bit of a different challenge, because then you face the consistency and the consistency challenges. So that's why a game studio of a certain size will typically take 9 to 12 months to start implementing AI into the workflow. And that's why I think, you know, there is a law that says, I forgot the name, that says people like overestimate the impact of a technology on the short term, but they underestimate the impact of the same technology over the long term. I think AI for gaming, at least, is a great example. Back in late 2020, as an industry, might have overestimated the impact. Things stayed fairly consistent for 2 years. But now we really see some really transformative examples all across the board. I mean, look at, what's the name of that game? The Pokemon-like game, Palworld. Where Palworld became a 100 million revenue success overnight by leveraging AI to create their assets. I think we're going to see more and more of that. Games that turn out big successes made by, you know, sub 10 people team in just a few months.
Hopefully. And after all, the end user takes the advantage.
Well, they get more games. They get more campaigns, they get more content, more options. So yeah, it's going to increase overall the quantity and even, I think, the quality of the games that are being built.
Yeah, surely. So Emmanuel, how does Scenario integrate with existing game development workflows like Unity?
Well, it's an ongoing project right now, even though we are actually, if you are a Unity Muse beta user, you know, Muse is the name of the Unity initiative in AI. It covers a lot of features, including code, including 2D, textures, sprites, and so on. Scenario is part of Muse now, but it's still a beta initiative, which will be expanded into mainstream, into production in the coming months. And hopefully, I think it's just the start. I think we have a great web app, which I think is the easiest way to get started with Scenario, just like app.scenario.com. But people are used to their own UI, their own software, and their own workflows. And so we have that API that makes Scenario available even with, you know, from potentially from any other software, including Unity and more soon. And the same API can be leveraged if you are building a game and you want to build your content generation in the game using the Senao API. And it's already happening with one example just a few weeks ago before Christmas with Ubisoft. They launched it's not the main Ubisoft game. It's called Captain Laserhawk. It's a crypto Web3 based game where every new player gets a PFP or avatar, a unique one that is being generated by AI in a very guided way, leveraging the Senao API. So yeah, another example of integration.
Awesome, awesome. So Emmanuel, we talked about gaming use cases, but of course, Senao can be used for other use cases. What are the top use cases right now for Senao?
Well, it's literally every time you need a branded asset to be generated consistently. And I think we targeted gaming initially because I analyzed the need of the market, the fact that these guys need constant new, you know, content and a certain large quantities of new content. But I came to realize the same technology applies to marketing, design, and a lot of other use cases. We have one company, it's a customer called Alan, A-L-A-N. It's a health insurance company, so pretty far from gaming. But they do have a very specific branding with a little mascot. It's a little marmot. And that little character, it's a blue mascot, is very, very recognizable. And they want that little character to be everywhere on their marketing materials, in the sales materials, on the website, everywhere, social media, and so on. And they actually use Senao to generate that mascot now at scale. Even though they are not a gaming company, they do personalize everything they do using AI and using Senao.
Awesome, awesome. One of your, I think, top tweets was about virtual influencers, which can be generated with Senao. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, it's one that blew up with, I think, 1 million views or something early 2024. that was an interesting one because then we saw, like, I don't know, I would probably find dozens, a couple dozen or more companies that claim to do just AI influencers. To me, it was more Senao never claimed to be an AI influencer company, but to me, it was a great use case, a great example that you can consistently reproduce a character. And specifically in that case, it was a photorealistic character, a woman with like purple hair and so on. I took one example. I think and then people, you know, started a controversy or debate whether AI influencer should be a thing or not, whether it's, you know, desirable to have AI influencers. I think to me that tweet was just a proof of concept rather than a product that we want to develop. I believe though that customer support will rely on avatars that will be AI generated, and then it's gonna be something we will see, and we will talk and we will interact with consistent characters that will have been AI generated. And by the way, if you remember when I said training your custom model at the beginning of the podcast, well, that AI character was made possible by basically training a custom model on 10 or even less images of that character. But just from 5 or 10 images, you can do 200 or other variants, whether it's a new outfit, a new expression, a new pose, you know, the character in a certain setup, in a certain background. From 5, you get to like 5,000.
Awesome, awesome. So Emmanuel, do you have any feedback or success stories from the developers using your product that was memorable?
Oh yeah, I've got a lot of them. One of them said that they were able to train models making 80% of production-ready assets right out of the box. So the hit rate was 80%, which is, I mean, it's the highest hit rate I've ever seen, honestly. Everybody makes, you know, sometimes the AI feels like a casino, like a slot machine, I would say. Yeah. You know, you put a coin, you hit generate, and you pray hard that what you get is good. And then there is a lot of waste, unfortunately. and you get to select only the transitions you like the most. Usually the hit rate is more in the, you know, few percent. You get one image out of 100. But that customer said 80% is good. Obviously, it was a rather simple use case with backgrounds. When you go into characters, especially humanoid characters, you might not get such a high hit rates because like the way you generate a character has to be extremely, you know, specific proportions and expressions, and you don't want that uncanny, you know, effect. So the same customer, by the way, also tried the training models for characters and got very high hit rates, except some manual edit were needed for just a few minutes, let's say 5 to 10 minutes. You know, you fix an eye, you fix some, you know, expression and color on Photoshop and so on. But what used to take more than 2 weeks was taken down to a few minutes, 5-10 minutes using Scenario. This is a game changer. And I've got plenty other, stories. I love the indie stories telling me that they were able to ship something much faster, much cheaper that they would not have been able to do. I think it's the perfect, you know, perfect example for AI. But I love the larger customer that can bring this to scale as well.
There are a lot of creative people out there who can ship indie games or basically any software products that they have been, their creativity was blocked by their inability to use software or coding and etc. And I think there will be an explosion of creativity after generative tools like yours.
Yep. Oh, yes. And it's just starting. Like the next wave will be 3D. 3D has been quite low quality, I would say, for 2 years.
Yeah.
Because a mesh, I mean, if you're in XR, you know that you've got the mesh, you've got a topology, you have the texture, the UV. This is far more complex than one image, which is like a 2D image. But we're seeing some very good, strong base models being developed right now. And I think 3D is just lagging maybe 1 year behind 2D, maybe 18 mm-hmm. months behind 2D. Right now you have like perfect image. Right now, you cannot differentiate an AI picture from a photograph.
Exactly.
It's very hard, right? Well, I think just wait 2 years and you will not be able to differentiate a 3D model that is AI generated versus a human crafted 3D model. Just give it 2 years.
But the thing is, might just skip it. Skip the 3D bit. Current world models and video models and etc. CEO of NVIDIA Jensen says the future of the industry will not be rendered, it will be generated. But completely skip the 3D.
So I was in the room, by the way, it was in March 2023 at GDC in the Sequoia office. There was a meetup and I was sitting on the first row. When Jensen said this, he might have said it again, of course. By the vision, I'm a true believer that it's going to be the case. We see world models like the one from, you know, World Labs, from Fei-Fei Li and many more. They're being developed. I think we all underestimate the time it will take to get to production, you know, commercial production.
Yeah.
Especially for games. Games, they do follow cycles. A AAA game takes 3, 4, 5 years to be shipped. AAA games started being developed 2 years ago and will be shipped maybe in 2 years. And the time it takes to completely switch from that existing rendering to a new one, I think it's more in the 5 to 10 years. We should not expect it in the next 2 to 3 years. And I wish I'm wrong, by the way. You know, I wish it happens faster, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Emmanuel, I've seen your demos of Scenario creating, generating skyboxes. And this way you can also create 360 images and get into VR. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you've got to try it in VR with the Apple Vision Pro. I mean, unless they discontinue completely, obviously. Otherwise, do a Quest, Quest 3 will do. I think it's making a skybox. It's not obvious. It takes some time to fit, you know, the seamless aspect of the skybox, the geometry of the skybox with the horizon, the depth effect, and so on. Being able to generate endless skyboxes, I mean, will bring much more diversity in the type of environments that can be found in VR. Sure, it's not a mesh, it's a skybox, but now anybody can you know, have their own custom environments for their own VR spaces. And I found that fascinating. And by the way, there is a game which is kind of a Roblox-like game that is using it. It's called Cubes, C-U-B-Z. And they are letting their user generate the skybox they want as they create their own world.
I see.
So it's happening. It's just not instant. You know, making a skybox at a high resolution will not take a few seconds like it's the case for images. If you upscale it, it's going to take more like, you know, half a minute to a minute. But you can always find ways to make the person wait patiently.
Awesome. Yeah, totally get your point. So, Emmanuel, one thing that is concerning about AI startups is that the big ones like OpenAI, Anthropic, etc., will disrupt them and do what they do with better quality and with their infinite resources. They can do anything. And basically, there isn't any moat for startups in this field. What do you think about that? How do startups like yours create an edge for themselves and protect themselves from these big companies?
There are two modes. Well, first of all, if this was the case, OpenAI was here 2 years ago. And Anthropic was here 2 years ago as well. And we still saw an explosion of startups. So OpenAI might have killed a few startups, but they could not block this Cambrian explosion of AI product and services and startups. So we should not expect the large AI companies to kill the majority of AI product and services. The thing I would say, the moat and what surprised me over the past 2 years, the only two moats in AI are the workflows, convincing workflows, and communities. When I say workflows and communities, I mean the model itself is not a moat. You might have a great model, but just wait 3 months and a better model will come in no time, you know? And that's what we've seen with, look at what's going on with text. And on the image side, you have like SD 1.5 and then SDXL and then SD3 and then 3.5 and Flux and FluxDev and Ultra Pro and now Red Panda and so on. So this is very hard for models to differentiate and to be a moat. A workflow, however, that gathers, that aligns various models and features to go consistently from A to B, input to output. And if that workflow is being adopted by a customer in production, it is likely the customer will not change workflows every 3 months. It's kind of a nightmare, right? So workflows might stay while they are being upgraded by new models constantly. The workflow is similar and the quality of the models makes the workflow even better. That's a moat. That is sticky. I see it. We see it. And the other moat is the community. So if you look at products like CivitAI or even Midjourney, so to say, they do have a huge community and it's very hard to displace a community. So that is another angle. But then if you're building a big enterprise SaaS product, you don't bet really on a community. You bet on a community if you're building a B2C prosumer consumer product like CivitAI typically. And I would also say there is no moat, which is why a lot of people back in 2023 said the incumbent would be disrupted quickly. You know, the Adobe or Unity or, you know, Microsoft and Google and so on and Meta and so on. We actually saw something I was not really expecting back in early 2023, which is incumbent going into AI very hard, very fast, with a lot of resources. Generally speaking, of course, not all of them, you know, but like most of the incumbent, I think Adobe is a great example of it. They, back in late 2022, everybody was saying, oh, Midjourney has won, or, you know, whatever, Stable Diffusion has won, and so on. And Adobe came with Firefly. It's a great model, lots of features related to, AI around Firefly as well. And usually incumbents tend to buy startups versus build. In AI, it's the opposite. People have been building more than buying.
I see. Yeah, I get your point. So you're actually riding the wave instead of just competing with them. If the model changes, if the models improve, you take the advantage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right now, it's our third generation of model over 2 years. SD 1.5 was the first one. SDXL was the second one. Now we're into Flux. And now we go into ethically trained, responsibly trained model like Bria. And we should expect more models to come in. The first time we switched from generation one to generation two, it took us about, 4-5 months. And then from generation 2 to generation 3, it took us a month. And I think when we would switch from generation, gen 3 to gen 4, it's going to take us maybe, just 2 weeks. and so on.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. So, Emmanuel, what are some unique features of Scenario that you're particularly excited about that you ship in the future?
Yeah. So the underrated feature, the best kept secret of Scenario is a feature we call model mixing or merging models, where you get to train individual models. So say model A and model B, each for a purpose, but there is a way to merge, to bring together model A and model B into model C. So let me give you an example. You are training, let's say, a character model on a certain type of character, okay, certain face and outfits and so on. But then you want to change the style of the character in a certain way. However, that character, the training images were not in that style you want. What people can do is train another model, this time on the style, and then merge the model A character and the model B on the style, and they get the character in a certain style. And it's only two models, but you can do it up to five models and more. And so this is very interesting, because then people get to do what I call model engineering. They have strategies to build models, which open huge creative possibilities that are much more interesting and much more powerful than prompt engineering. And I think it's something people come to realize pretty late after they start prompt engineering and stuff. And I think it's I see a lot of future in that sort mm-hmm. of approach.
I see. So, Emmanuel, on another topic, one thing that gets talked about generative AI is the content generation, and the content that models are trained on is the subject of copyright. How do you address concerns about this subject, that scenario?
Train on is the input, but then there is the output. So you got to consider copyright for the two parts, right?
Yeah.
On the input, the core feature of Scenario is to train your own models. So people bring their own data, 10, 20, 50, 100 images, that they usually, in most cases, like 90, whatever, 5% of the cases, they own that data. And they train a model to reproduce that style, that subject, which they own the right of, right? And the model will generate the same style or the same character. I'm no judge, I'm no lawyer, and I'm no Supreme Court, but I've talked to a lot of studios, including legal teams, and most, if not all of the legal teams so far, said that they feel pretty okay, they feel pretty safe to just reproduce a style or a character that they own already.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot provide that legal advice saying this is clear and it will be validated by all the lawsuits, the ongoing lawsuits will be cleared or dismissed. But I tell you what, like most of the legal team, they give us or they gave their studio the green light for this. Using the base model itself without any customization, yeah, can lead to questions and can lead to discussions with the studio and the legal team whether it's safe or not to do. But what we're seeing new models coming out
mm-hmm.
that are it's they call themselves responsibly trained or ethically trained. One of them is Bria. The other one is Firefly. Firefly is not open source. Bria is open source. But you see a new generation of models that are coming out that have been trained just on fully licensed fully licensed data. And I think it's going to be something that we're going to see more and more, especially when most of the data to train model will be synthetic at some point, because that's the case with text. So it might be the case for images. And now to finish your question, there is the copyright for the output. For now, the US Copyright Office has said they will not grant any copyrights on generated images. They consider there is not enough human input, effort, creativity to grant copyrights. I think this will not last. I'm convinced this will not last as long as the user can prove there was enough effort in generating that images. So if you just put like a dog in space, press enter, and then wait for that dog in a space suit to show up, that might not be considered enough effort. But if you start explaining the copyright office, listen, I trained two models and merged them. And then I started like combining the models with other, you know, reference images. And then I generated, 100 images. And I selected the best ones to retrain a model. Like, you start spending days making your image. And that might be considered like, you know, human creativity, human effort. And that will be granted copyright, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. So, Emmanuel, how do you catch up with all these models coming out and catching up with integrating them in scenario?
I'm on X, Twitter, X. The AI community is very strong on X. That's where, that's the number one, I would say, network for AI builders and AI users. Much better than LinkedIn, much better than Instagram and so on. So when you're on X, you usually pretty quickly see the new waves coming out before. I mean, it's not about being in, you know, like newsletters or going to meetups or knowing the right people and so on. This is whenever a new model or new workflow gets, developed, just wait a few hours to a few days and it's everywhere on X. And it's usually open source and it's usually on GitHub and anybody can use it right away. And I'm usually like, oh my God, this is horrible. We're falling behind, like this is more advanced and so on. And then you turn back to the market and you realize it takes months for the market to adopt these models. You know, 3, 6 months, 9 months.
Exactly. So, Emmanuel, getting on another subject about yourself, what are the books or games that you suggest and recommend to all the listeners of our podcast?
Books? You mean books on gaming specifically? I don't know.
No. Games and books. Okay. Are you a gamer?
Oh, I am. But I've got 4 kids, so I don't play as much as I used to. I've been always a fan of either the franchise, which I started playing with, like Fallout and Age of Empires. I don't know. I never stopped. And everything, you know, real-time strategy games. That's my type of game that I like. I've never been like a, you know, first person shooter type of person. That's I still enjoy like a lot of retro gaming. I even bought myself a new Game Gear. You remember that from Sega? Game Gear.
Yeah. I had one.
Well, I got so many cartridge, you know, so many games. I never sold it, and I bought a new one to keep playing with them. So, yeah, pretty low key, right? Yeah, I still give it a try. Give a try to the new Diablo editions, that sort of titles. And then on the books, man, it's the same. I wish I was reading more and as much as I used to. But if you are an entrepreneur, you should absolutely read the hard thing about
my favorite one.
Oh yeah, I mean Ben Horowitz, of course. I think that's the number one book that I would recommend to any entrepreneur by far. The rest is, I think, second category. Just start with this.
Yeah, I totally agree. Emmanuel, how do you envision scenario evolving over the next years?
Well, we pivoted and we raised that seed round on that vision that games will be built on a content generation engine to power content creation at runtime in the game. I want to be that content generation engine. But I realized the challenges around quality, content safety, cost, speed, and consistency. So this won't be the main use case for us in the next few months or few years, but I think that's the direction we're taking. Meanwhile, I mean, doing, you know, live ops and marketing and concepting art, it's a great business to be in. It's a significant market to be in as well, even though we are exploring, you know, use case beyond gaming, like the one I mentioned. We're 17, yeah, almost 20 people right now. So still a fairly small team, but just give us some time to raise our Series A and we'll expand a bit further.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Emmanuel, as of our last question, what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs looking to enter the AI?
I would say try as much as possible, literally. Like get a month, buy all the subscription you can. It's like $20 each, literally. Mm-hmm. Don't do anything else but trying all the product on the market. Text, code if you're a coder, 2D, 3D, audio, you know, 11 Labs or HeyGen or Udio, Suno. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And like, don't spare any subscription. And it's going to cost you maybe, I don't know, if you do like, I don't know, 50 subscriptions at 20 a month, come on, like $1,000. but you will learn so much. That's the only way, you know, listening to podcasts and looking at product demos. Yeah, great. But it's nothing replaces like testing yourself. And so test as much as possible for 1 month and you will learn much, much more than any other, you know, books or blog posts that you can see.
Awesome. Awesome. So, Emmanuel, it was great having you on the All Things XR podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.